Blog Talk Radio.
Life, growth, and wellness.
Welcome to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am so excited that you're here with me tonight. And on this journey, I get to serve as your tour guide. So I appreciate you. I'm so excited that you chose to join in today. So let's get this party crunked and started. And you know, there are certain things that Mama and them told you that you got to do before you entertain company. So for us, what we do, the first thing we do is we take time to anchor ourselves in inspirational, affirmative reading, positive thoughts is basically what it is. And so this comes from my blog post that I post every day, and it's revsandy.wordpress.com. Today's inspirational message is called Foundation. So my stepfather, Otis Brown, taught me and my siblings the importance of building a strong foundation. He founded Brown & Brown Construction in Los Angeles many years ago. And his construction work, he demonstrated the absolute necessity of a solid foundation. A building cannot stand for long without first having a secure and strong foundation. So you cannot build anything on a weak foundation, for it will surely collapse over time. This same illustration can be used for all and any areas of life and living. So is your life built on a strong foundation? My life is built on the love and promises of God. I believe my life is a gift. I believe I am here for a reason. I trust this is my time to flourish. I know I am to multiply and to be of good cheer. In multiplying, I add to the goodness of the universe. I add peace and harmony. I add justice and service. In all my activities, I multiply. My foundation is strong, sturdy, and solid. My foundation is constructed on truth principles. The truth is, each person is made in the image and after the likeness of the Creator. Each has an equal right to be here at this time. I know that all is deserving of honor and respect. I give my best at all times, starting with myself. My foundation consists of unconditional love. I have no expectations of others loving me in return. If they so choose, I am a grateful recipient. Otherwise, I remain obedient to that which I am to do, love without expectations. Included in my foundation are the materials of joy, hope, faith, wisdom, strength, harmony, and acceptance. Ashe. And the very next thing that we do here on Life, Love, and Wellness, Sandy Rogers Show, is we invoke and invite the energies and the presence of our ancestors to be among us. We invite them and we celebrate them at all times, but especially on Tuesday night at this particular hour, because we trust that they are here with us, guiding us along. And so for that, we are eternally, eternally thankful. Ashe, we appreciate your ancestors. So it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. Tonight's show is called The Blind Blogger. And Mr. Maxwell Ivey is going to be sharing his life with us. I tell you, I met him online, and he is a joy to talk with. He has never went out with a loss for words, so you're going to get a kick out of hearing his story. And he's very inspirational, and so that when we get to hear how even being totally 100% blind, he manages to live a business life. He's a blogger, and he's a published writer. So I'm enthused and excited to have met him. And so Mr. Ivy, Mr. Max will be joining us shortly. So audience, you know you're always welcome to call in and talk with us on 516-531-9819. And you simply press 1 to alert us that you want to talk to us on air. So we are going to take a break so that we can come back and get this show going with Mr. Max. And I know you're going to be really excited to hear from him. But let's just take a short break, get it all together, and then we'll be right back. That was Rascal Flatts with Bless the Broken Road. And if you heard someone that was joining in on the lyrics, that was Max on that call. So I had to mute his line for just a moment. But he had already told me that if I played some music that he liked, he was going to try to control himself. But he didn't know if he could or not because he loves to sing. So, Max, I'm gonna open your mic up right back up in just a moment.
But, Sandy Rogers Newsreel.
I wanted to alert the audience, especially here in the Atlanta area, an organization that I have partnered with since inception back in 2010. It's called Telecom Professionals for Social Responsibility. And they are going to be hosting a free summer camp program for 100 underserved youth between the ages of 6 and 12. It's called Camp Integrity, and it will encourage high self-esteem and focus on identifying the many forms of bullying. They will use games and activities to identify bullying behavior and assist the campers with strategies and problem solving. So Camp Integrity is scheduled from to begin on June the 13th, 2016. And so they're looking for partners with people that would like to either come and do presentations or to make a donation. And it says bullying is not just a kid's issue, it's a social issue, which I totally agree with because, you know, it even happens in the workplace. And most times those people have learned that younger in life. So they're looking for dedicated, committed partners and volunteers that will support their vision. The CEO's name is Barbara Carrington, and if you would like to get in contact with her for whatever help you can provide, her number is 404-579-2165. Again, that's Barbara Carrington at 404-579-2165. So that's Telecom Professionals for Social Responsibility, and they have been on the cutting edge of presenting anti-bullying programs for our youth since 2010. So they're to be commended for the work that they're doing with our youngsters. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, and tonight we have with us Mr. Maxwell Ivey, and he goes by the tag The Blind Blogger. So Mr. Ivey has such a long, long resume. I'm going to read part of it, and then I'm going to allow him to come on and tell his story in his own words because that way, you know, we hear it for real and not what's just written down on paper. So Maxwell Ivey is a totally blind business owner, blogger, podcaster, coach, speaker, and soon-to-be twice self-published author. His primary business is helping people sell new and used amusement equipment and related items. He started after the early death of his father led to the closure of his family's small traveling carnival. While building that business, he had to learn many things, including how to hand code HTML. And for those of you that don't know that computer language, start a blog, record videos, use social media, including Pinterest, build an email list, recruit clients, write ad copy, generate email newsletters, letters, and much more. So he's lost over 250 pounds. So that's at least one whole person, if not a person and a half, right? And he had the gastric surgery, but he also learned how to eat healthier and start getting regular exercise, drinking more water, quitting caffeine, eating smaller portions, and taking vitamin supplements along with prayer, meditation, and a positive attitude. So he's a firm believer that you cannot achieve your big goal or dream without first getting physically, mentally, and emotionally healthy. So I would like to introduce to you my new friend. His name is Mr. Max Ivey. I call him Max because he says that's what his friends call him, and he is now my friend. Hey, Max, are you on here?
Yeah, I'm on here. Can you hear me on that end?
I can hear you fine. Well, welcome to the show.
Right.
Welcome to Life, Love, and Wellness.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I appreciate you having me on. And, yes, you are my friend now, so you're more than welcome to call me Max. We've had several good conversations leading up to this, so if there was ever any doubt, it should have been over a long time ago. So
That's true.
And I'm sorry for interrupting your music there, but I was surprised that that particular song was one that you decided to play because it's one of my favorite songs. It has a good message, and I've actually recorded it for my YouTube channel. So I actually knew most of the words. It's been a few months since the last time I sang it. It's one of those songs for my voice. I generally have to warm up or I have to sing it a little lower than the way them boys sing it, but I still get the message across. And you know, one thing I like to do when I record a video for my website is I like to start off by singing because it's one of those things that relaxes me. It gives me a chance to get started and be comfortable, and then I can get into whatever message I'm wanting to share with my group online. But so it was kind of natural for me to break in there on your audio. And thanks for muting me. I appreciate that.
I was tickled because you had just told me, you know, I'm going to try not to sing, you know, if it's something that I like. I love that song, Bless the Broken Road. It has such a deep meaning to it. And so that, too, is one of my favorites. And so I thought you would appreciate it. So tell us a little bit about your upbringing, Max. And like where you grew up, how you grew up with the traveling carnival. I mean, a lot of people only read about that or see pictures of it on television or something like that. Tell us how that was coming up as a child. Where did you perform? Did you just help your dad, or how did that business go?
Well, my grandfather started the carnival back in the 50s and 60s here in Texas, and my dad and three of my uncles all owned carnivals of different sizes at different times of my life. Sometimes I helped with the lifting and carrying that went into setting up and taking down rides and games. Sometimes I operated games. Sometimes I did or helped with the booking or the promoting of the events. First job I ever had, my grandmother decided it was better to put me to work where she could watch me than it was to have me running the midway with the rest of the kids. And at 5 or 6, she had me box up the popcorn and put the hot butter on it. And then I would hand it to somebody else, and they would take the money for, I think back then it was like 50 cents a box or something, and that was with butter. So, you know, I grew up in the business. All I ever really wanted to do was to help the family run the carnival like my dad did, which is, you know, not unusual for a lot of kids that see their parents doing something that they love and something that the whole family does. So it's not a surprise. I wanted to be part of it. And I was lucky enough to travel the country with my dad for about 11 years before he passed to lung cancer. And we rode thousands, if not more than a million miles, in old pickup trucks and motorhomes, and, you know, going from town to town here in Texas about 40 weeks out of the year we would travel. And we never had more than about 7 or 8 rides, but we were well respected. And even now, there are events that still ask us to provide the carnival contract, even though they know that we don't own any rides anymore. But they can depend on us to find somebody that will bring the rides if they can feel comfortable having the people in their community come out to the midway. And, you know, that's a real testament to the way you do business. If even after you're out of business, people still want to deal with you. So my dad, you know, he grew up in South Carolina. He may not have spent a lot of time in church, but he knew about the golden rule of treating other people the way you wanted to be treated. And I like when people would, you know, naturally people wonder about dealing with the carnival, especially when it comes time to check up on the amount of money they're supposed to get for the event. Whenever somebody would ask my dad about them selling the tickets so they would know how much we grossed, he would always say, sure, go ahead and sell the tickets. That means I got to hire two less people this week. So, you know, I was in the carnival business. I operated a couple of games. I did the booking. And, you know, after he passed, I lost my best friend. So, and also we ended up having to connect with my uncle's carnival. And we had competed pretty bitterly with my uncle for bookings over the years. So it was not a good feeling to have to know that my business was gone and that I was working with a company run by a family that I didn't have a lot of good feelings for at that time. So I had a little bit of depression. My games that I had eventually got down to just one game, and then eventually that game wouldn't make any money anymore. So I finally realized that I needed to do something different. Of course, the real big beginning of all of what I'm doing now started with a health emergency. I was staying in a motel in Port Lavaca, Texas. I peed the bed the next morning when my family was trying to smooth over the mess with the hotel owner. They noticed that the skin on my legs was tight and discolored, which is supposed to be a sign of heart problems. They made me see a doctor, and the doctor said, you know, when you get back home, you need to do something about this or you ain't going to be around much longer. So at the end of that season, I went home. I saw a good doctor. She realized I had sleep apnea and got me treated for that with one of those machines that pumps air into you at night. That allowed me to start getting better rest. And when you get better rest, you have a lot more energy and passion, and you think a whole lot more clearly. You also are a lot easier tempered around people. You manage to tolerate the point in your life that aggravates you better if you're getting good sleep. And that led to me start. People don't realize it affects that much. I like to tell people that, you know, sleep apnea is a dangerous thing that a lot of people don't realize they have. And I tell women, especially women, because generally it's men that get it, either through obesity or genetics. A lot of men have sleep apnea, and they refuse to be evaluated for it or get it treated. And I always tell women, if you want to get their attention, tell them that sleep apnea can cause impotence and lack of interest. That'll usually do it. That'll usually get them to see their doctor.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. So you said the sleep apnea caused your skin to be stretched and discolored?
No, it causes high blood pressure. It causes it can lead to heart attacks and strokes.
Okay.
I was obese. I was well over 600 pounds at this time too. So
really?
In addition to the sleep apnea, I was morbidly obese by anybody's measure. You know what I mean? Even at 6'4", if you're weighing 600 pounds, you're shortening your life every day that you weigh that amount, you know. So my doctor was smart enough to realize that you can't treat it all at once. You know, you didn't get to be that kind of a mess overnight. And so first she got me on the CPAP machine and corrected my sleep apnea, and she, you know, prescribed medicine for high blood pressure and gout and high cholesterol, and a few. I was on about 7 or 8 prescriptions every day for a while there. And eventually she said, Max, you're not making any progress with your weight on what you're doing. How about going to hear a talk on gastric surgery? And I said, you know, I don't want to do that. I feel like I'd be admitting I was a failure if I went. And she said, well, why don't you just go listen? So I went down there and listened to him talk. And the first thing I found out is that only 50% of people that have a gastric surgery lose 80 to 90% of the weight they want to. A lot of people even gain weight back or gain more weight, end up weighing more than they did before the surgery. It's only if you're willing to make the investment and change your life as far as your diet, your exercise, the way you live as far as being more active. And so once I realized that I was going to have to do hard work as part of this process, I was all in. And on February 14th of 2012, I weighed 512 pounds. My brother has a picture where he swears, he says even in the picture it looks like I was still well over 600 when he took this picture before that weigh-in. I had the surgery on October 2nd of 2012, and by May or June of 2014, my doctor said I had reached my ideal weight of 256 pounds.
Wow.
So my friends like to remind me that I lost a whole person.
At least. I mean, that could be more than a person dependent, you know. And so that was just a year and, what, 8 months or something like that, huh? It wasn't even two years.
Well, it was closer to 2.5 years, because you got to remember there were 6 months between the first weigh-in and the surgery. And I had already started to follow their teaching and start changing my diet and stuff. I lost 81 pounds between February and October. I had lost 81 pounds. And the psychologist I spoke with asked me, she said, have you thought about not having the surgery? And I told her, so, you know, I've been at this place before several times in my life where, you know, during the winter months we would follow a good diet and lose 30 or 40 pounds and feel like things were going good. And then you get back into your normal life or routine and you realize you can't maintain that. I said, I really believe that I need this particular tool in order for me to get healthy and stay that way. And it turned out that was the right decision, that even okay. with all the stuff I've learned along the way, I don't think I would still be at such a good weight and in good general health if I hadn't had the surgery. Now, a lot of people don't need the surgery, and I'm not going to be one of those people who says that, you know, who if somebody comes up and tells me, you know, they're 40, 50 pounds overweight, that they need to call my clinic and talk about a surgery, because that's, unless you're a real little woman, that's generally not enough of a physical problem to where the surgery would do you any good anyway. So I believe people need to live a balanced, healthy life, but that includes your physical, your mental, your emotional, your spiritual. And I have had many times in my life where I have prayed for help and, you know, have had things come about where I looked and I go, that wasn't me doing it, that was God doing it. And, I went to this, and the clinic where I had my surgery done was the only clinic in the entire eastern half of the state of Texas, which is a big state, that would take my insurance. And it turned out that I found out after the fact that they're one of the top rated clinics in the state. My particular surgeon has been ranked the best surgeon in the entire state two out of the last 3 years. They routinely send their interns after their internship is over to other practices around the country and to other countries. So
this was
the only place I could have the surgery, but it turned out to be the best place available to me. And even though we had to drive 50 miles each way every time I had to visit my doctor, it was the place for me to be. And you know, you would think in a city like Houston, which is pretty much built up on the hospitals and in the medical profession, that there would be more than one clinic. And the fact that there wasn't, to me, that was putting me in a place where I would have the best chance for this to work out for me, so that I could be an example to other people and I could, you know, have this inspiring story to share. And I guess you're fixing to tell me we need to go to a break, because I tend to run on.
No, but I did want to ask you, though, so you've gone from weighing 600 pounds down to 256 pounds. Now, when you have that gastric bypass, so is that permanent, the bypass? Do they go back and undo what they've done, or how does that work? I just wanted you to explain that for us.
Okay, sure. Well, it depends on the procedure you have, but in general, once they do it, it's permanent. There is the lap band procedure and the new balloon procedures that can be reversed, but with the gastric bypass or the duodenal switch, which is the procedure I had, once you have it, it's pretty much permanent. I have been the duodenal switch, which is what I have had, is a newer procedure, and I've been much happier with this than people I know who have had the straight bypass. It's similar to what they call the gastric sleeve, with the exception of that they remove part of the stomach, but not as much of it, and then they also remove part of the small intestine. So it leaves you with more with better ability to digest what food you do take in. So I haven't had the issues with stomach upset and reflux and stuff coming back up my throat as some of the people I know who've had the bypass.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's part of the thing. You have to accept that this is going to be the way you have to do it for the rest of your life from now on.
Sure. So in that process of understanding and accepting that you needed to change your lifestyle all over, like a total overhaul, you changed your methods of eating and what you were eating. So did you also incorporate exercise in that as well? I know you said that you started drinking more water and you supplemented everything like with prayer and meditation. But in a positive attitude, did you also do exercises? I know your vision is impaired, but were you able to physically get up and do things, or was it just a matter of your food intake that you controlled?
No, I have exercised more, and I now exercise 30 minutes a day. When I first started, I was only able to use the stationary bike because not just the weight, but also my balance wasn't very good. And to be honest with you, I was always afraid of treadmills. I have heard a couple of cases where professional athletes fell and injured themselves on treadmills, so I was scared of them. But for a long time, at one point in the process, I had to go see a cardiologist. Instead of putting me on his treadmill, he had an ultrasound ordered. So it took a long time before I got in good enough health where I could walk on the treadmill, and even now I can only walk on it at about 2 miles an hour. So, and I started off with one of those old-fashioned bikes. The only way your butt can handle it is if you put a towel or a pillow or, you know. I know you've seen them. A lot of the audience may not know what I'm talking about, but I know you've probably seen one. And I was lucky enough that I've got an uncle. He's a marathon runner. He's one of those obscenely healthy people. And once he saw that I was starting to work on getting healthier, he started giving me his older exercise equipment because he works out so hard that he needs to have the latest equipment, even if it's not worn out yet. He will still replace it.
Okay.
And so he gave me a much better bike, and he gave me my current treadmill. And I wish we wore the same size shoes because he gives away a lot of shoes. But me and him.
Well, that's good. I mean, but, you know, 600 pounds on any bicycle would be seem like it would be a little difficult to handle. So, but I'm so proud of you and what you have accomplished with your health. And so congratulations to you on doing that, because that was a huge step in order for you to appreciate and to live the life that you're living now. And so once that weight came off, it seemed like that was when it really kind of picked up for you, where you to be able to realize some of the other dreams that you had. And if you don't mind, can you share with us your life history around being blind? Were you born blind? Was it gradual? Did it just happen suddenly, you know, as you got older? How did the blindness occur in your life?
Okay, sure. I have retinitis pigmentosa. Most people refer to it as RP. When I was born, I had perfect vision up until I was 4 or 5 years old. And then they started noticing that my vision wasn't as good as the other kids and had me tested. It gradually declined until I was in my, 12 or 13, and then I had a big drop-off in vision. It stayed current until I was in college, and then I lost it down to what I've got now, which is, in my opinion, total blindness, although my most recent doctor says that I still can technically have light perception.
Oh, okay.
And I do everything either with stuff that talks or that has tactile options or asking somebody else to look at it for me. So to me, I'm just blind. That seems to be the simplest way to look at it.
Okay, okay. So how do you translate being blind into writing a book and having your own blog site, being actively being a blogger with your site? And so you've got one book. I have been reading on it, Leading You Out of Darkness. You've got a second book that's either like hot at the printers or the publisher is finished with it, and you're constantly creating new and improved works. So how are you able to do that?
Well, I like to say a lot of people would be better off if they had that good friend that would just dare them to do stuff that's crazy. This really got started when I decided that I was no longer going to be traveling with the carnival, and I better start working on some other way to make a living. And since I knew about the carnival rides and games, I thought, why not help people sell their stuff? I had actually helped my family a few times when we needed to sell older equipment so we could buy newer rides. So I started that business, and I was trying to promote the business online, and everybody said, you got to have a blog. And I'm like, well, what is a blog? And a few people didn't really know what one was, but they said, you know, Max, if you're going to be online, you got to have a website and you got to have a blog. And I'm like, well, I don't have the first clue how to do either, but, you know, we'll start. When I first filed for the domain name, I called my brother up and asked him if he would do it because I figured he would have an easier time online than I would at that time. I had a computer with speech on it, but I wasn't really familiar with the internet at that point yet, and I sure didn't have the first clue how to create a website. But he filed for the domain name, and then he looked at me on the line. He created my first website of 4 pages, and he found a program that would allow me to just upload photos of my equipment list and then write a description and press next, and it would do all the stuff for me. Fortunately for him, he got a really high paying job moving the state fair rides for a lady a few months after I started my website. So I'm like, okay, I got a website. I need to figure out how to maintain the site and how to expand it. So I figured I don't have the money to pay somebody to do this for me. Even if I did have the money to pay somebody to do it for me, I'm not sure I would want to, because how would I know if I could trust them or not? So I figured I'll just start checking to see if there's a way I can learn this myself. And I found out about the W3C school, and I just started learning one part of doing a website and, you know, one thing, then the next thing and the next thing. And eventually I could create my own pages. My first website that I created was kind of bright. I'm told that it had an ice creaming yellow background, and the blue and red text was really gaudy. But it worked, and I was able to expand the site and add pages to it that I wanted to add to it. I was able to add the blog, and so it was one of the things, if you don't worry too much about how you look doing it and just focus on, can I get something done that I need to get done, then you can move forward. So I had created the site, and then people said, you got to have a blog. So I started the blog. Then people said, well, you got to promote the site and the blog. And so I went to social media and I started joining groups on social media. And basically every time I posted something, these people would talk about how inspiring I was and how it motivated them to want to do more or to even to start their own blogs. So they kept telling me I was inspiring. I kept telling them they were wrong. Finally, they convinced me that, you know, Max, you're one of these guys that you have the perfect excuse. If you wanted to stay home, sit on the couch, watch TV, and eat junk food, nobody would give you a hard time about it because you're blind. But the fact that you show up and you have big goals for yourself and you want to accomplish things, that makes those people who don't have a physical disability keeping them from their goals feel like, hey, what is my excuse? So they
exactly.
Finally convinced me that, exactly, you know, and I can't believe that I argued and disagreed with them for so long. But, you know, people, we are all put on this world with certain missions in life, and I have, you know, a couple of years ago, I finally realized that one of the things I'm here for is to inspire and motivate other people to do those things that they either haven't done yet or they've tried to do and didn't succeed at the first few times. So I'm here to take away people's excuses, and that's a cool thing once you accept that that's your role. And another thing that I have realized over the last few years is some people ask me, you know, Max, you're blind. Have you ever thought about how this applies to being somebody who has faith? And I'm like, it's simple. If God wanted me to see, I would have never lost my vision. If God wanted me to have my sight back, I would have had it back 30 seconds ago. Since he took it from me and hasn't seen fit to give it back to me, then he must have a reason for me continuing to not have vision. And since the books and the blog posts and all this other stuff is helping people, helping these people go after what they're here for, then I feel like I'm doing my job. I'm doing what he sent me here for.
Exactly. How long have you been doing the blogs and building the website? When did all of that start for you?
The current blog started in August of 14 when I wanted guest posts.
Oh, wow,
Oh, yeah, the current website's not even 2 years old yet.
Okay.
I want a guest post on a website called Aha Now, and the lady told me I could write about anything I wanted to, but she really thought I should write about being a blind blogger, and so we, over the course of about 3 days, without much sleep, because she's in India and I'm in the U.S., and with the time differences, it just didn't seem like there was, it seemed like we were always exchanging emails until finally we got a post written called Life Lessons from a Blind Blogger, and the post got over 150 comments. Even now,
wow!
If I'm having a bad day now, it's one of those posts that I go back and I reread some of the things these people said, and just the way they responded, the heartfelt words that they used to describe what it meant to them for me to share my journey, what it meant, you know, as far as me being a blogger. And it was what eventually was like the tipping point to cause me to create the new site finally. And the first post on the new site, I'm sure you saw it, is I think I'm ready to be an inspiration. So
right.
And, you know, it's one of those things. It's all about timing because, yes, there had to be the opportunity there, but I had to be ready to accept what people were saying about me. And it actually took that post. And the interesting thing is after I wrote that post, I actually had a few people who were no longer, who thought poorly of me because they thought that I was too good a writer or too good a blogger to have to exploit the fact that I'm a blind blogger. And, you know, a couple of people, even now, still don't return my emails or talk to me on social media, but I don't really worry about that because this isn't anything new for me. I'm still the same guy I was. I just happened to have embraced a tag that people had given me because I was a blind person who runs a blog and who is out there on social media, in the groups, doing whatever I can to get exposure for my website, my blog, my story, my client's equipment,
I like tag, you know, because it immediately grabs someone's attention when you say the blind blogger, because you get a visual, you know, so like, how is this person doing that? If they can't see, how are they blogging, you know? And so I like it just the way it is, and I think that it tells your story before a person even reads what you've written. So that's powerful. I am going to let you take a break for a couple of minutes, catch your breath, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We've got Mr. Maxwell Ivey with us tonight. The blind blogger is what he calls himself. We'll be right back. Max, that's dedicated to you. That's the Impressions. We're a winner because that's what you are to me and the work that you're doing. So you've told us about your childhood and going with traveling with the carnival and what that was like and how the business shifted for you when your dad died. And you've told us about your blindness and how that's impacted your life. Can you or will you now share with us how writing has changed your life? You know, so you spoke about how you did the blogs and you got the compliments and you did the international exchange and you got 150 comments on that one blog. But has it impacted your life in any other way?
Well, the writing is something that I've always been good at least since I was in junior high school, because, you know, back then they insisted that we all learn how to write, you know, how to write letters. And so over the years, it's been something I've done, and the blogging has reminded me that I enjoy doing it, that I love doing it. People seem to think I'm a decent storyteller. In my mind, I'll never be as good as my dad was at it. I would really be curious to see what he would have done with a blog, because he was one of the all-time champ tall tale tellers. And we could never tell if he was telling us the straight truth or not until later on when sometimes he would admit to it. But you know, as far as writing the books goes, I never expected I was going to write a book, much less two of them. And I've got a file on my computer that's more of a memoir that's like 50 or 60,000 words, where I've been writing down stories and events that I remember from my past, either from anywhere from my childhood all the way up to recent events. So, but the first book actually started on a dare, because a lady that I connected with online said they were going to have an online summit, and that if I was going to be, they wanted me to be part of it. If I was going to be part of it, I had to come up with a book or a course or something that I could promote as part of being on the summit. So she challenged me to write a book. I said, I've never written a book before. I don't know the first thing about what I'm doing. And she said, I'm going to share a quote with you from Richard Branson. He likes to tell people, promise that you can deliver and then figure out how. So I told her, I said, okay. I said, but since you've put it to me that way, you won't be able to be upset with me if I come up a little short as far as finishing this book by the deadline. And she said that was fine. She just wanted me to see if I could do it and get started. So I started writing the book, and about 3 weeks later, I was halfway through it. And she calls and says that there's four other women involved in the event. They've decided they want to make it an all-woman event. And you know, growing up in the carnival business, I understand about the value of putting people on the midway or faces behind the screen. So I was fine with that, but I had written enough of the book where I'm like, well, I started this, I'm going to finish it. And I finished writing the book in September, 1st of October. Then I got cold feet. I started hearing those voices asking, well, you know, is the book big enough? Is there enough in it? Do people even want to hear what you have to say? So, you know, the usual gremlins that most any creative person faces, whether it's a book, an album, a movie, a podcast, whatever, you just start to get into that, am I good enough? But eventually, a friend of mine from California said, you know, Max, I've read this book. It's great. It's the perfect size because it's big enough that it has actual lessons in it that I can use in my daily life, but small enough that I can carry it in my purse. And she said, I know who your editor is, so if you don't start the process to publishing this, I'm going to send it to her for you. You'll just have to live with it. I said, okay, you've convinced me. So I sent it off to my editor, Lorraine Regulie at wordingwell.com. And in January of last year, it was available for sale on Amazon, and we've done okay with it as far as sales. It's gotten 5-star reviews. But I like to tell people in the book, one of the points in there is about how you have to decide for yourself what success looks like. And With the first book, my idea of success would be completing the book, getting it published, having at least one person buy it, at least one person review it positively, and at least one person learn something or actually have a take action in their lives after reading the book. So it's much more than exceeded those expectations. Or, you know, that book is definitely a success, and it's been such a good success that I'm almost to the point where I'm ready to start working on a second edition of that book, and, you know, share some more stories and, you know, maybe even improve on the exercises that are in it. So that's, and the second book, you know, I don't exactly know any better way to put this. It's once you do one, sometimes you get hooked, you know, sometimes it gets in your blood and you're like, you know, I never thought anything would get in my blood again after I quit the carnival business. You know, that's one of those things. If you're going to travel with a carnival or a circus or the rodeo circuit, that's one of those things you pretty much have to be born into.
Right.
So, but you know, this whole writing thing has really, and I find now that if there's something frustrating me with the website where I sell people's equipment or the blog, if something's frustrating me, I just open up a new file and start writing. And, you know, 30 minutes or an hour later, I've got a new post or a new page or a new chapter, and whatever was bothering me is gone. It's all, I can't say it's like meditation because you're focusing on the work instead of focusing on yourself. But I sometimes find myself, for lack of a better word, let's call it goofing off and writing instead of working.
But, you know, they said as long as you enjoy and you have a strong passion about what it is that you're doing, it's not work. So I think that's where you are with the writing. I wanted to share what you wrote in the original email to me. You said, I wanted my book to be different, so I included my email address and encouraged the reader to write to me with their progress. I did this because we both know far too many people who have read the book or listened to the radio, watched the video, or even attended an expensive seminar, and they still weren't able to move forward. And that is so true. So you included your email. You encouraged people to be in communication with you. So did that take a lot of your time? Did that help you to develop additional relationships with that interaction between you and the people that were reading your book? How did that affect your life?
Okay. Yes, it has given me the opportunity to interact with some people on a deeper level. But to be quite honest with you, I'm a little disappointed in the email address thing because I figured if I gave out the email address, people would actually use it. And I've had many coaches who warned me. They said, Max, you gave out your email address. People are going to abuse that. They're going to write you all the time. And, you know, to this point, I've had maybe 5 people even go through all the 11 exercises and email me on that. And they don't.
Wow.
I've had several of them who have said, you know, Max, I understand you're a coach, so I don't want to take advantage of you as far as what I send you in my email. But I've really been disappointed. I can't tell you exactly how many copies of the book that I've sold or that I've given away, but I know it's got to be a couple hundred copies. And I would say that there might be, I don't know, maybe 10 people who email me on a regular basis that connected with me through the book. And I, you know, I understand that a lot of people. I understand a lot of people say they want to.
No, what I was going to say was that, you know, that may just be the normal reaction or response for people. You know, they read a book, you just said it. You know, you said it in that email that I just read from, that, you know, people go to these events, they read the book, they listen to the audio, they do all of that, and yet, you know, there's no improvement. And so either people didn't get to that page in your book, wherever it was placed in there, or they didn't feel that that it was a sincere invitation, maybe. I don't know. But it's probably a very natural reaction. And so that you really shouldn't take it personal that people didn't reach out to you. You know, if you sold 200 books, that's success, right, to me, right there.
No, I'm not meaning that I take it personally. I'm sad for them that so many people missed an opportunity that was out there. And, you know, I think a lot of it is there are people who talk about wanting to make changes or improve, but don't actually do the work. And that's part of it. And then there's probably a certain number of those people who got the book because they know me or they know of me or they like my story and felt like they would be supporting me by getting the book. So there's lots of reasons why they haven't. But of the people who have received the book, I was hoping that more of them would take advantage of the opportunity. And I'm just sad for them. I'm not personally upset or offended or anything. I can only work with people and help people to the point that they want to be helped. And like you said, some people may have not gotten to that page. Some people may have read the book and not taken it as a sincere offer, because I understand that there's a lot of people out there, especially in the online world these days, who you just don't really feel like they mean what they say or that they're the person that they appear to be. And I do my best to avoid that. You know, one of the things I do often is when I'm being interviewed, I will give out my phone number and my email address, because I want people to know that I'm approachable and that they don't necessarily have to hire me or buy something from me to send me an email. Because in life, you never really know what's going to come from meeting somebody, whether you meet them in person, on the phone, or online. And I like to keep myself open to all those opportunities that God has in store for me. So, you know, if people want to if they want to go to justask@theblindblogger.net, or if they want to call me up at 979-215-1770 and talk to me, or if they want to send me a contact request on Skype at Maxwell Ivy, I'd be more than happy for them a little while, because you never really know where a conversation is going to lead. And it may not even lead to anything. It may just be 15 minutes in your day where you talk to another human being and you have a real conversation like we're having now, and you feel energized and inspired yourself to go out and do even more the rest of that day.
That's true. That's so true. So true. Well, you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We're so blessed to have Mr. Maxwell Ivy, the blind blogger, with us tonight. He's sharing his story, his life, his triumphs, and his successes over what many would call failures in life. But for him, they've just been stepping stones to get to a higher plateau. And so he calls and he refers to his visual impairment as a blessing, and he's learning to use it and to use it in such a way that it inspires other people and motivates other people to live their lives. Because as Max says, the steps that he has outlined in his book, Leading You Out of Darkness, are the same steps that you would take to achieve any goal in life. And in reading the steps, I think you would agree. He does have that in an e-book, and he's going to share with us the information on how to obtain that in just a few minutes. So, audience, again, if you have a question or a concern and would like to talk with Max directly, our number here at the station is 516-531-9819. And just press 1 to let us know you want to talk on live on air. And for Max, he's got a second book. So, Max, is that second book, is it already ready, published? Is it ready for us to consume it? or are you still working on some last-minute details on it?
It will be available no later than the first of the month, and it'll be available
okay.
on Amazon and CreateSpace through my website. One of the things I found out when I published my first book is that while Amazon has the largest potential audience, they take a pretty good chunk of your income. So I like to have my book available on my website through a site called Sels, S-E-L-Z, and I very well recommend it to anybody that's got a product like a book or an album or something that they want to sell online, because the process was real easy, even using a screen reader and being blind. I had no trouble uploading my files and submitting them. But the thing is like, for example, if an ebook is sold in the U.S. on Amazon, they receive 30% of the sale. I sell an ebook on my website using Sels, I receive 95% of the sale.
Oh, and, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Much a big difference. So that's why the book will be available, and they can go to my website. We've already created a page for it. They can go to theblindblogger.net/books, and on that page,
okay.
the second link there is It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag.
So tell me what that's about.
Well, last Christmas and Thanksgiving, I was doing some writing and listening to a lot of holiday television, and of course, during the holidays, if you're, you know, they got ads for jewelry and toys, but they also got ads for fitness centers and diet clubs and exercise equipment and stuff like that. And I started thinking, you know, I learned a lot about losing weight, exercise, affirmations, and just things that I have learned in life in general. I thought, you know, I can probably write just as good a book as anybody else can. So I started working on a book, and it's called It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag, because one of the things that I have learned, and a lot of people know but they still try to fight, is that depriving yourself or eating only one type of food, like the Atkins or something, it may work for a short period of time, but generally starving yourself or depriving yourself of certain food groups doesn't work for the long term. And we've had to come up with some tricks in our own family so where we can actually feel like that urge is satisfied, but not to the point where you're going to wreck your diet and put on a bunch of pounds. So the idea actually came from about once every week or so, we buy one package of frozen cookie dough, and we make that. And if you split a small package of cookie dough four ways, everybody gets five cookies. Nobody's going to put on 5 pounds for five cookies, at least very few people. And you feel like you ate, you know, you feel like you splurged. You know, you got that sweet tooth taken care of.
That's true.
And you don't have a whole bunch of other cookies staring you or talking to you in the middle of the night thinking, you got to eat me, you know. So that got me to thinking, you know, it's not the cookie. The cookie ain't the bad thing. The cookie is a bag that has 60 or 70 cookies in it. You know, because I don't know the exact count, but I know that the last time I picked up a bag of Oreos, it felt to me like there was, you know, there's three lines of cookies in a bag of Oreos. It felt to me like there had to be at least 50 or 60 cookies in there.
Exactly, right.
and I felt that bag at the store, because we don't bring a bag like that home no more. But that's where I got the idea. It's not the cookie, it's the bag. You know, it's not the two or three cookies, like if you buy one cookie at Subway, it's, you know, buying a whole bag of Chips Ahoy that's the problem, because most people just ain't going to leave it at three or four or six cookies. That just ain't the way it works for most people. So, you know, I figured that was an honest approach. And some of the other chapters I have in there are about, you know, making peace with your mirror and how you see your body, which led from a question a lady asked me in a magazine article about how does a blind person appreciate being thinner. And I had to talk about things like being able to walk up and down steps and ramps, being able to exercise for longer periods of time.
Right.
You know, I have to ask people how I look. I can't just, you know, look in the mirror. But then I started thinking, you know, maybe the mirror, maybe looking in the mirror, maybe not being able to look in the mirror is a good thing, you know. So it all depends on how you look at it. But I talk about affirmations. I talk about why food journals don't generally work. Myths about exercise. You know, the one big myth is that it has to hurt or be painful, or that it has to last a long time. Because to me, the whole point of exercise is, as long as you're moving, as long as you're getting activity, you're doing something that's getting you closer to your health goal. So
there you go.
If you want to dance in your cubicle to the music on your iPod, that's however many calories you wouldn't have done if you didn't. I like to say it's not about what you do, it's about doing something. And the more repeatable the exercise is, the better. So naturally, if you're doing something to the point that it hurts you, you're not going to do it again the next day.
You're just making too much sense.
I know, and that's got me worried because, you know, common sense doesn't always sell. So I'm a little nervous, but yeah, I think
common sense is not common either. So, so we've got a caller, area code 619-884. Would you give us your name and where you're calling from and your comment or concern, please?
How are you doing? This is Ali talking in San Diego.
Hey, Ali.
How you doing? I'm down here just listening.
Great.
And I was going to say, leave them cookies alone all the way, man. I'm just saying. I don't mess with them. I try to leave them alone all the way, man. They got the it ain't the exercise and the food in itself, you know, if you, like you say, if you keep it moving, you know, you'll be able to move a lot of that food around too, because folks, most of the time, they'll sit there and eat and they won't walk. They'll just go sit down and, you know, kick back and go lay down, you know. That's bad. But also, you know, I've just been trying to tell folks to just know when your body shuts down and when it wakes up, you know, because that's important, because a lot of times people want to eat hamburgers when their body didn't shut down, you know, and they don't know what time that is, you know, and it's real difficult for folks to understand how that works. So, you know, you try to tell them, and, you know, all you can do is try. You know, if they don't listen, hey, they didn't listen to Jesus either, you know.
True, yeah. So Max, in your newest book, it's not the cookie, it's the bag. Do you talk about what Ali had just brought to your attention? Is that part of your discussion in your book as well?
Well, I talk about many of the food choices that I was making that I thought were, that some of them I thought were even good for me, that it turned out that they weren't.
Okay.
One of the biggest things I've had to do is to learn to switch liquids for solids. But as far as a hamburger or a cheeseburger, a lot of times the problem with the cheeseburger isn't necessarily the cheeseburger, but it is the French fries or the amount, the number of cheeseburgers. It's that big 30 or 40 something ounce soda you're drinking with the cheeseburger, and he is right. A lot of people, they will eat and then they have a inactive lifestyle. They don't do anything that as far as getting daily activity. And for some people, even putting on their shoes and doing some stretching would be an improvement over nothing, and something they could do in their own living room that wouldn't require them to invest in any equipment. I think there are lots of opportunities for people to get exercise if they decide they want to. I mean, I'm sure you know ladies who three or four times a week will go walk the shopping centers or walk the mall because it's a good, safe place for them to go get their exercise in a in a place where there's a lot of other people around. So it, I the one point I make pretty often in the new book is that I don't claim to have all the answers. I'm trying to get a conversation started. I'm trying to get people to think more creatively about what they're taking into their bodies, how important or not important their health is to them. So it is a process, and the book has, you know, there, like I said, there's chapters on affirmation, on faith, on not being afraid of the scale, which is something I'm told only somebody who has weighed, who has been really heavy, can completely understand. But it's a very positive, motivational kind of book. It does talk about weight and exercise, and I'm pretty proud of the book, and I'm hoping it's going to help a lot of people. We'll find out in a few days, because today is the 24th, so I've got a week it'll be available for sale. And I'll be honest with you, I'm at that point now where I'm starting to get just as nervous as I am excited. I think it's a good book because I got an equal level of excitement and nausea at this point. So I think I've done pretty good.
Well, that's good. And you we must put the different methods out there, Max. I wouldn't necessarily suggest a person eating a hamburger minus the fries because of the other calories and eating meat, period. But, you know, if a person has been accustomed to eating two cheeseburgers and, you know, like two double orders of fries and having a big chocolate shake or something, you know, we could get them down to one cheeseburger, man. That's good. That's an improvement. And so that's where your method would come in and really serve to help that person. Because if you take a person from an extreme to another extreme, they're going to look at it, they're going to be like, I can't do that, I'm not going to even try. So at least I believe what you're saying your book does is step a person to something that's manageable. So you're asking the person to take inventory of their own life and develop a plan for themselves. So I like that method. I really like that, because it seems like it's workable for a person.
Well, you know, you read my first book, and you know how important I believe it is to break things down into small steps and to do whatever small thing you can every day to move you closer to your goals. So, you know, having read that from my first book, then I'm sure you understand that I'll be incorporating that as well into the second book. And it is all about what can you do? What can you do today that you didn't do yesterday as far as your diet, your exercise, your frame of mind, the people you surround yourself with, the way you look at yourself in the mirror, because, you know, there are, as I think I said in there, if you see yourself as a healthy or a pretty or a sexy person, there aren't a lot of people who can tell you you aren't. And when you look in the mirror can't tell you you aren't. But if you start off thinking of all the things that are wrong with you and you looking, you're going to see a hideous person, then it will be a gargoyle that looks back at you. You know, if you post your pictures on social media and you think that I'm hideous, generally the few mean people that are out there that you have connections with on social media will probably say something that you would rather not hear. But that's because you started off with so. You know, like I said, there's a lot of different areas in the book, and in all of them I talk about taking small steps, doing what you can today, and continuing to improve. Because, you know, I didn't get to where I am. Even with the surgery, it still took over 2 years. And I have to continue to do the same things on a regular basis to stay at my weight. So that's another thing a lot of people don't consider is it's great to make changes in your life, but are there changes that you can live with from now on? And
there you go.
That's some,
and that's a key point right there. You know, that's a monumental point that, you know, because we think that once we get there, man, we've arrived, and so there's no more work to be done. And that is so far from the truth, right? So you got there. It's just like in a relationship, you know. You don't just wine and dine and, you know, buy the gifts and be cute all the time for a person. And then when you get involved in the relationship, you let yourself go, you know, and the words are no longer sweet and kind. You know, they become real short and piercing. So it's the same thing. What the actions and the movements that you take to get where you want to be are the same words and actions that you've got to use to maintain it. So one of the things that Ali does, Max, he's in San Diego, and his calling card is hugs. And so every day he posts something on Facebook about sending out a hug to people and how he's wrapping these hugs around people. And I can actually feel that, you know, pretty much like the work that you're doing. So we all have a calling to add something positive out into the universe. And so I want to publicly acknowledge Ali and his hugs because I get them every day. And I love them.
Well, I'm from Texas, and I give some good Texas-sized hugs, so I would definitely like to get on his list and get his daily hugs. And I'm glad to meet you, Ali. I wasn't aware that you and Sandy knew each other. Most times I do interviews, they don't have people call in at all, even when they give out the number. So it's nice to meet you, and I do hope you start sending me some hugs, too.
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, you know, it's already there for you in the spirit, isn't it? As soon as you said it, it was there, you know, and that's how I work with the vibration. You know, it's all about doing something that you can do right now to help people right now that ain't going to cost you nothing but something that the Most High God had already gave you right now, and that's what I use.
I'll be looking forward to connecting with you on Facebook or somewhere as well, Ali. I'm sure that Sandy will tell me how I can get a hold of you.
That's true.
I will find you and hug you.
Well, thank you. I'll be looking forward
to it. All right.
I'm serious. I'm funny, too.
We've got another caller, area code 940535. Give us your name and where you're calling from, please.
Hey, my name is Eve, and I'm calling from Texas. And I want to welcome you. Oh, thank to both of you. I want to say to you that I am a strength lover and a strength. I attract strength. I care for strength, and I'm happy about strength. And my question to you is, what makes you so strong and continue?
Is she asking me or you, Sandy?
I'm asking you.
What
keeps you going? And that was actually my next question to Max. So thank you for asking it, Eve. What motivates you to keep going?
You are so strong. You know, I don't know how. You know, you did talk about the mirror, and I agree. You know, I don't know how you do with the mirror and conversations and feedback. You do well to me. You do excellent. But what I'm getting is so much strength, and I love it, and I love strength. And when I feel and I see and I hear strength, I want some of it. So I want to know what keeps you so strong and so going and so motivated.
Well, the first thing is people like you, and that I don't say that just to say it. It's the best part of what I do is when I write a new post or when I do an interview is reading the comments people leave when they tell me that by listening to me that they were inspired to go out and do something that they hadn't done before, that they were motivated to reconnect with a family member or to try to figure out a way to solve a problem. So a lot of it is knowing that I'm helping other people do these similar things in their own lives. And I really love hearing when people, you know, they go, hey, Max, if you could do it, then why can't I do it? And the other thing is that it, sometimes it just helps to have an audience. It just helps to know that there are people out there who are counting on you, depending on you to show up every day. And I guess the last part of it is I grew up in a family of people who made a living in a hard industry where you work 40 or 50 weeks out of the year trying to get from one town to the next, and they don't give out style points. You don't get a bonus for degree of difficulty. All they really want to know is there carnival there on Thursday night when the event is ready to open so they can raise the money for the Lions Club or the Widows and Orphans Fund or whatever charity you're there to raise money for that week. And so you learn from an early age that you have to be strong. You have to find ways to solve problems as opposed to making lists of why you can't do something. So I think that's helped me. And I don't know, maybe being blind, maybe the fact that I've had, especially with RP, I have had to make so many adjustments in my life because my vision for a long time was constantly changing. So I guess if you want to sum it all up, I'm strong because I've lived a hard life that's forced me to be strong. And good Lord's been looking out for me. My family taught me some good lessons. I've got lots of great friends online who encourage me and motivate me as well. And Eve, I would love it if we could connect too, because you have an energy, a passion. I mean, I bet you hear this all the time. I bet you got friends who say, you know, I get tired just being around you.
Let me tell you what I'm getting from you. You got so many different areas. See, I can't say enough. You got me like, really? You got me like, you know, how do you say a cat with his back stretched up, humped up? You got me going in that direction because what's happening, you're doing more than one thing, and I love it. You're doing so, look, the books. Watch this. The beautiful eyesight. Look, the exercise. Look, the pullback on kicking the food that you put in your mouth. The calmness, the sweetness, the honesty, hot dog. And then now you're on a roll. Now you're throwing it all at me, and I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to catch that. I'm trying to catch this. I'm having a ball. So hey, without a doubt, I want your information, and it's totally on because to give this back and forth to the world, do you know we need it? I need it. So it's totally on, and I really appreciate you to the best degree.
Well, thank you so much, Eve. I really do feel your passion and your energy, and I don't see how anybody could be around you for more than about 5 seconds and not want to go out and climb a mountain.
It's on. Hey, you. Only reason I'm leaving is because somebody else needs to talk. Look here, a lot of love, and this is not the end of us. And peace. All right.
Thanks, Eve. So Max, we're down to the last 4 minutes, and I wanted to make sure that you once again let the audience know how they can contact you, what's coming up for you, and any other information that you would like to share. So we're down to 3 minutes now. If you would like to take that time.
First, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I know you worked really hard to do this show, and I never like to take a chance on not telling people that. So thank you for having me on, and they can find me at theblindblogger.net or just ask at theblindblogger.net is my email address. On Twitter, I'm at Maxwell Ivy, and I'm coming up on 10,000 followers on Twitter, which will be a big milestone for me, so people please follow me on Twitter. They can check out my singing. If they like my singing, they can check it out on youtube.com/MaxwellIvy. I do like meeting new people, making new friends, so feel free to drop by the website and send me a message. And Ollie and Eve, I really do hope that we connect, because y'all have some special spirit to you, and I need more people like you all in my life every day. So, and you know, that's one thing I really want to compliment you on, Sandy. Most shows I do, even if they give out the number, people don't call in, and if they call in, they ain't this special. So this has been a real wild night. I've enjoyed it more than I've enjoyed one of these in a while. My radio show is going to be starting June 6th on blogtalkradio.com/Universal Energy Radio. That's all one word at the end there. And I'm going to be doing an online summit, and I will send you the link to the summit so you can add it to whatever you post after this, because I can't remember the link to the summit. But on July 4th, I'm going to be giving an hour-long talk on living a no-excuses life, and that's going to be my first live talk where it isn't an interview format. So another one of those steps forward that hopefully will lead to me someday soon speaking to people in public. And who knows, maybe coming to Atlanta and visiting you and some of the other great people out there. So
Let's do it.
All right, it sounds like a good idea. And the next book comes out on June 1st, and they can find out anything they need to know about me at
theblindblogger.net. Blindblogger.net. Max gave his number earlier. I'm going to repeat it, 979-215-1770. And we're coming up on the close of this show. It has just been absolutely wonderful to have you here with me tonight on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Max, you have been a tremendous guest, and you have shared so much, and your life is just incredible. It's so unique in so many ways, yet it's the same in a lot of ways as well. So we appreciate you taking time from out of your busy schedule to share with us on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And you guys, as always, I wish you nothing but peace, love, and happiness. And take care of yourselves. We'll do this again next Tuesday, same time, same station. I love you much.